Have you ever thought about kind of what your story will be once your life becomes just a story? We go through our lives, we live our lives, we spend a lot of time in our lives doing something. And at some point, that's going to end, right? I don't think I'm breaking any news to you. All of our lives are going to end one day. And what will the story be once you're gone? Like, what will be the remnants of the things that you do and the lives that you impacted? Because the thing is that, whether we realize it or not, throughout our lives, we are writing a story. And I guess the question is that, what is it that influences that story that we write? Because I think that we're sometimes tempted to think that to write a life that is kind of a great story, we think it comes down to the big decisions in our lives. That, you know, if I can get these few big decisions throughout my life right, then that's going to create a great story. But in my experience, and I think in probably most of our considered experiences, if we think about it, yes, the big decisions, the big choices are important, but what really determines the direction of your life, what really determines the story your life will write, are those small choices that you make every day, those recurring habits that you apply every day. Because they're the things that actually get us through the day, right? That as we live out our lives, we may think of our lives in terms of years or decades or kind of whatever, but we live our lives a day at a time. And how we spend each day determines how things work out, right? It's kind of like cramming for a giant exam, right? That if you view life as a series of like three or four exams, then I'm going to goof off all the time, but when the big moments come, I'll get it right. You know, for a simple test, you know, in school, you might be able to pull that off. But it's those daily habits that build things, right? It's those daily habits, those daily choices that you make over and over again, minute to minute, that really determine where our lives go. So if those choices are such an important part of kind of how we write a story, what determines those choices that we make? Like, what are the things that really drive our choices? And we might be tempted to say that, well, you know, I'm a very goal-driven person, so every minute of every day, I'm all about my big goals. And that might be partially true. But if we're honest, the thing for many of us, myself included, that drives our choices throughout the day relates to what we've been talking about in this series, our baggage, right? That we all carry stuff, right? It might be pain you experienced when you were young. It might be a painful relationship that really impacted you, right? There might be just difficult experiences you had to work through. You know, there may be the self-doubt that's inside of you that you just kind of can't break free of. Or someone told you you would never be nothing, and so you kind of get up every day trying to prove them wrong. All that stuff is baggage. And if those things drive our choices, we may not always be making the choices that are healthiest for us. So the best way to deal with that is to actually deal with our baggage. I mean, how many times have you sat there trying to kind of change some aspect of your life? And man, you just get up tomorrow and do that same thing again that you didn't want to do yesterday. And you say, but this is the last time. I'm not going to do it anymore. And you do it again tomorrow or next week. Or maybe get like one good day slipped in there and you think you kind of got it this time. And you do it again. Right? That's our baggage that causes us to do that. And so if we're going to actually kind of do all we can in our lives, if we're going to actually write the story that we would like to write with our lives, it comes down to dealing with our baggage. To first of all, to recognize that it exists. You know, if you have to kind of get up and push it down every day, it's there. Right? And so if we don't deal with it and get free of it, because you can't push it down forever, eventually it's going to pop. So if we want to really do the things in our lives that we want to do, we've got to deal with our baggage. Now, our kind of prime example of a guy carrying a bunch of baggage is the guy we started talking about last week, Samson. Samson is a dude with baggage, right? That he kind of just pursues these like super unhealthy relationships all the time. takes ridiculous chances all the time in his life. And we focused a lot last week on the kind of choices that he was making. Right? We saw that last week, just kind of out of nowhere, he kind of sees this woman he's literally never even spoken to and said, "Ooh, she's going to be my wife." And starts a whole slew of trouble. Now, for any of us, that would be a really bad idea. Marrying someone you don't know, I know there are entire TV shows about it. Please don't watch those. Please don't. I mean, that's not a message from God. That's just a healthy thing to consider, right? Don't watch that stuff, right? But that would be bad for any of us. But for Samson, it was really significant, right? Because Samson would have been called to a very important purpose. Remember, the Samson was part of what are known as the judges, right? We've been talking about this a lot over the past few weeks. Remember, judges are this kind of very kind of chaotic time in Old Testament history. You know, a time where there was no clear leader in place, where the people were kind of aimless in a sense. But then there were these people who were raised up who were called judges. And the judges would come up and they were meant to kind of lead or protect the people. Now remember that this is the ancient world. You know, I've said this a bunch, but just for context, we're talking about over 3,000 years ago, right? More than 1,000 years before the time of Jesus. Right? The ancient world, which was a brutal world. And so protectors were really important. And so Samson had been called by God to be a protector. Who was he supposed to be protecting the people from? Do you remember? The Philistines. Who did he try to marry? A Philistine. Bad idea. Right? That he is literally trying to mix in with the people that he's meant to protect his own people from. And as we talked about last week, you know, if this was a great love story, maybe we'd reconsider it. But again, why did he like her? She was hot, right? She was hot. She was. We now know that the Philistines likely came from the area of Greece, so she would have looked very exotic compared to what he was used to. So he was kind of being led by his special decision-making process. Do you remember his decision-making process? I want it. I deserve it. I can handle it. Do you ever do that? I have. Right, I see something I want, and there could be a whole bunch of reasons why it's a bad idea, but I'm like, oh, I've worked so hard this week, I deserve it. Or gosh, you know, everything's going so well, I deserve to celebrate. And then someone points out all the bad things that can happen. I go, yeah, I know for other people, but I can handle it. That's how Samson made decisions all the time. And it's a process that we're all at risk of, particularly if our baggage is driving our decisions. Because our baggage causes us to try to compensate. That when we can't find comfort inside of ourselves, we try to find it from outside ourselves. By buying things or consuming things or using things that we think will give us peace. In Samson's case, he seemed to crave a greater sense of acknowledgement and recognition. And he also just kind of was attracted to these really unhealthy, dangerous relationships. Now, when it comes to Samson's life, basically, as we left him off last week, he had created a ton of problems, right? That he had, you know, had attempted to marry this woman. It went horribly wrong. And for Samson, though, it wasn't so bad. But for the people around him, it was terrible. People literally died because of that choice, right? That people's property was destroyed. Things are stolen, right? Foods, you know, entire food sources are destroyed. And Samson kind of walks off and says, well, you know, things happen. And Samson carries on. And as we pick up with him this week, what we find is that he continues this on and on. You know, and I would encourage you to consider reading the story of Samson. It's only 5 chapters. So it's Book of Judges, chapters 12 to 16, 5 chapters. Man, he creates a story of turmoil in 5 chapters like no one else can. And he just goes through and he just keeps making these bad decisions. He keeps kind of getting into trouble. At one point, he actually, the people he's supposed to be protecting, he almost causes them to be destroyed. Even at one point, he is almost captured. The Philistines finally almost capture him. But then he pulls it off, and he gets away with it. And because of that, he carries on. Because the way Samson sees things is that I can dance closer and closer to the edge of danger over and over again, And things always turn out fine for me. And I think the thing is that we find is that Samson is this guy with this incredible opportunity in front of him, incredible sets of gifts and abilities, an opportunity to do wonderful things. And instead, if you read the five chapters that document Samson's life, what you see is a story of recklessness. A person who chose to get up every day and make choices that day that led to drama, dysfunction, and reckless behavior. That's how he lived each day of his life. Rather than using the gifts and abilities that God had given him to make a difference, to make people's lives better. I mean, think about this. Samson is considered in the Old Testament the greatest individual warrior that ever lived. He was strong. He was an effective warrior. And basically, he could have been a person who protected his people, gave them a better life, lifted them up, could have led them well. Instead, he used his gifts and abilities to prop up his dysfunction. Right? He's such a good athlete that he can get himself into crazy, dangerous positions and still get himself out of it. He used all the gifts he was given on himself. He had a life with so much promise that he never lived up to because he let his baggage and his dysfunction drive him. And this is something that we all want to be aware of, right? That Samson is this very magnified example of what that looks like, but we all are at risk of that, right? That we all try to compensate for those kind of unhealthy feelings that we have inside. And we make choices that often aren't very healthy for us. And when things get a little shaky, we're kind of like, well, that was kind of close, but I got away with it, so I'll be okay. I'll carry on. You know, it's okay. It'll be okay this time. And we repeat it, believing that we'll always be okay. And that's what actually happens with Samson. Samson keeps going along, believing that he's always going to be okay. Until one day he's not. A day finally comes along that he wished he would have had access to a CD player. Because Tom Jones would have told him what to watch out for. He would have known that Delilah was someone to watch out for, right? Because if you know the song, actually, probably have a really great memory years ago. I lived in New York City. I'm at this one tavern called Wild E. Coyote, very family friendly place. No, it's not. Just so you know. And I went to the jukebox, and this song was on the jukebox, and I played it, and like literally the entire like it's a tavern, so it's like a bar in the middle and tables around the side. Every single person standing up at their table. It's just one of those moments that kind of only happens in big cities, and not every day, by the way. But it was like we were literally like beers in the air, you know, caught along. It was kind of nuts. But you know, the lyric is, right? My, Delilah, why, Delilah, that girl was no good for me. See, that's the part that Samson seemed to miss. That the girl was no good for him. Now, I do think that Delilah gets a bad rap. I don't think that any of this is Delilah's fault. I think that this is all a result of the kind of choices that Samson keeps making. Because the narrative tells us that sometime later, Samson fell in love with a woman in the Valley of Sark whose name was Delilah. Now, what's important to understand is that, remember that, again, just as a reminder, Samson's there to protect his people from the Philistines. Well, the Valley of Sorek is right on the edge of Philistine territory. So Samson wanders off yet again into a territory where he never belongs in the first place. And he sees this woman, Delilah, and just says that this has got to be it, right? Because it says that he fell in love with this woman. Now, fell in love for Samson probably means what? Not love. Right, that again, he's just visually intrigued by her, we'll say. We don't really know much about Delilah. We don't even know if she's a Philistine or not. She might have been. She was probably exotic because that seemed to be what he was attracted to. And although we don't know much about Delilah, we know a lot about Samson. Again, we know that when he says fell in love, he means infatuation, right? And that he likes these kind of dangerous romances. So he makes bad choices in romance. And even though this was a crazy idea, remember from what we talked about last week, if this is the exact scenario that led to all the trouble we talked about last week, yet he's doing it again. Why? I want it. I deserve it. I can handle it. He came away just fine last time, so he must be going to come away fine again. And one of the big challenges for the Philistines is that he was so effective as a warrior that they had tried and tried to take him down, and they were never able to take him down. And they know that taking him on physically is never going to be successful. But maybe this provides a chance, because the narrative tells us that the rulers of the Philistines went to Delilah and said, "See if you can lure Samson into showing you the secret of his great strength and how we can overpower him so we may tie him up and subdue him. Each one of us will give you 1,100 shekels of silver." Now that is an enormous amount of money, right? Odds are that Delilah, like most people at that time, lived day to day. Get enough food for today, start again tomorrow. And now five people are offering her 1,100 pieces of silver each. 5,500 pieces of silver. This is change your life money. But this is love, right? I mean, she's not going to give him over. She loves him, right? Does the narrative ever say that she loves him? Now we're told that Samson loves her. Honestly, I suspect from Delilah's standpoint, this is just some other jerk that's hitting on her, right? I mean, again, people didn't really respect women at that time, right? So that would have been common, probably common for her. So for her, this is really an opportunity. So she gets right to work. And she starts asking Samson, you know, a question he should have been very suspicious of. You know, not for nothing, but let's just say someone wanted to bind you in a way you could never get free of. What would that be? Now, of course, that should be a pretty good signal that this is not a relationship that's healthy for you. But Samson's like, I can handle it. I'll be fine. So Samson is a little cautious because we do know, if you know the story of Samson, there is a way to kind of defeat him. But he kind of lies about it. He actually does lie about it. He makes up this really kind of convoluted way that you could tie him up, a way that doesn't really make any sense. And he tells her, he said, if you did that, then I would never be able to break free. So later he falls asleep. And then suddenly hears a ruckus, realizing he's tied up exactly as he described, surrounded by Philistines. Now, because he lied about it, he could break free and immediately dispels the Philistines, saves himself, and all is wonderful. So now he must know that this is not someone he can trust. But he stays anyway. Because he's Samson. He always gets away with it. And this process of her kind of asking him, how could we bind you up so you could never break free? And then him being bound up that way, and then finding himself surrounded by Philistines, this process occurs over and over again. And each time, it plays out exactly the same. He's bound up exactly as he told her, finds himself there with Philistines, breaks free, saves himself. But one thing starts to happen. He seems to be becoming a bit cocky. Because each time he tells her how he could be subdued, he gets a little bit closer to the truth. He dances a little bit closer to the edge. He takes a slightly bigger chance, almost like he's kind of enjoying this idea of pushing it to the very edge and the very limit and pulling it off. That his life seems to be almost fueled by the danger and the drama. And I think that this is something that we need to be on guard for, right? That Samson dances closer and closer to the edge, convinced that he will never really pay the cost of his choices. And I got to wonder, how often do we do that in our lives? I mean, there are many different ways that we can do that, right? That we make financial choices that we know are not healthy for us. We buy things we can't afford. We put things on our credit card with no way to pay them off. Right, that we take time off of work without pay, knowing we need that money. And we get close to the end of the month, and we're like, man, I don't know what I'm going to do. But then we make it, and we're like, whew, well, everybody does that sometimes. And we do it again next time. You know, we're in a relationship that's not healthy, a relationship that is filled with drama. You know, maybe I'm the source of the drama, maybe my partner's the source of the drama. And we're not really loving towards each other, and we're not moving any closer to loving each other. And we go, well, that whole love thing, that's really a fantasy anyway. Nobody really has that. And we just carry on that way. You know, or we do things like drink too much and drive home, or consume too much and drive home, take, you know, drugs or medications too much, knowing we're fully clouded, and drive home. And you wake up in your morning, like, look out your window going, oh, the car's here. Guess I made it. I'm never doing that again. Until next time. And then we do it again. And sometimes we do it bigger than we did last time. And the fact that we get away with it that one time or the next time convinces that every time is going to play out just like that. Well, that's exactly what Samson was doing, right? Dancing closer and closer to the edge, continually getting away with it, so that moment where he doesn't get away with it. Because the narrative tells us that, so he told Delilah everything. He says, no razor has ever been used on my head, because I have been a Nazarite dedicated to God from my mother's womb. If my head were shaved, my strength would leave me, and I would become as weak as any other man. Now we'll talk about what all that means in just a second. But basically, he tells her this. He falls asleep, because apparently he sleeps a lot. He falls asleep. She shaves his hair off. Next thing he knows, he hears a ruckus, and he's surrounded by Philistines. And the narrative tells us this. He awoke from his sleep and thought, I'll go out as before and shake myself free. But he did not know that the Lord had left him. In other words, I've always succeeded before. I'm going to succeed again. I'm going to get away with it this time. I'm going to pull it off this time. This time, I'm still going to get through. Yeah, it was close last time, but I'm still going to get through. And he doesn't. Now, this says this happened because she shaved off his hair. Now, does that mean his strength was actually stored in his hair? Now, I don't actually think so, and I'll tell you why that's the case. He refers to himself as being a Nazarite dedicated to God. Right? A Nazarite was actually a vow that a person took, that you basically felt that God had put a call on your life. You had taken a vow saying that I will commit my life to pursuing that cause. For Samson, that cause was protecting and leading his people, which he clearly hadn't been doing, by the way. But the sign of a Nazarite was that from the moment they took the vow, they never cut their hair. They let their hair grow. And so the idea was the long hair was a sign of the vow. Not that the long hair was magic, but as in an environment where men kept their hair shorter, the fact that a man would have long hair would make it very clear that he was someone who had taken a vow. Well, Samson had not been taking his vow seriously. So I really believe what happens in this moment is his hair is cut off. It's not that God has abandoned Samson in the sense that he's punishing Samson for it. God is simply honoring Samson's choice. You have chosen not to honor this vow. So now you're going to look like it, and you're going to live like it. There's this great line from a book written by this Christian author named C.S. Lewis. The book is called The Great Divorce. Really weird title. It has nothing to do with marriage or divorce. It actually talks a lot about our relationship with God. And it's a fictional book. It uses a story, kind of a fictional story to do it. But this one quote from this book, I just love. The author says that there are only two kinds of people in the end. Those who say to God, thy will be done. And those to whom God says, in the end, thy will be done. In other words, we make the choice to follow God's leading in our lives, or we don't. And if God says, if that's how you want to live your life, go for it. Walk it out. Make those choices. Live those choices all the way out. See, what happens is that for Samson, he had been behaving as if he had never taken that vow, reaping all the benefits of it for all that time. Never really had to deal with the consequences. But finally, as he carries his baggage with him, not addressing his baggage, living out this way over and over again, a life filled with drama, a life creating all this harm, eventually his choice is caught up with him. I really believe that Samson's defeat was not God punishing Samson. I think it was simply God was allowing Samson to walk out the natural outcome of his choices. That all those other times God had protected him from his choices. But eventually God's going to let you walk out the natural outcome of your choices. He has let me walk out the natural outcome of my choices. And then let me find my way back out by pursuing him. Eventually our choices will catch up with us. And when that happens, we start going, God, why did you do this to me? And God said, I didn't do it. You did it. I'll be here when you're ready to look to me again. But you made these choices. You created this environment. You introduced this drama. You took those chances. I have been protecting you from them. But apparently that's not getting your attention. So maybe this will get your attention. I'll just let you walk out what you've chosen. So Samson ultimately gets in prison, blinded. And although at the very end of his life, he does kind of step up a little bit. He actually, at the very end of his life, while imprisoned by the Philistines, kind of goes to this kind of great attack, destroys a bunch of the Philistines, does help protect his people in that moment. But Samson never really lives up to what his life could be. Because the thing is that Samson had so much promise, right? He's considered to be the greatest warrior of the Old Testament. Incredible physical strength, speed, ability, that God seemed to be with him when he would step into these battles. But he never appreciated what he'd been given. He just used it to prop up his bad behavior. And I think the real tragedy of Samson's life is how his narrative ends. This is the last sentence after five chapters of talking about all this kind of crazy, out-of-control life he's had. The last sentence is this. Samson had led Israel 20 years. Now think about that. Samson was a man who had been given so many gifts, so many abilities. He had 20 years to use those gifts and abilities to lift up the lives of the people around him, to protect the people around him, to care for the people around him. And basically, the summary of his life is, well, yeah, he was there for 20 years. That's the story his life wrote, right? His life was a story of chaos, wasted opportunity, wasted abilities, that was summarized by, well, he showed up. So what about us? What do you want your story to be when your life becomes just a story? When the time has gone by and there's no more chance to make choices, what do you want that story to be? Because the thing that's driving our stories, if we have not done the work to address our baggage, it is our baggage, right? Our baggage, those things we're trying to overcome, that pain that we haven't dealt with, those things we're trying to compensate for, they're driving our choices moment to moment. And although we may get by with choices we make that are really unhealthy and still survive, or maybe we do make these big choices periodically that go well, when day after day we make choices that are driven by our baggage, by our dysfunction, that are driven by our pain or our attempts to escape that pain, you're never going to write the story that you're capable of. You're never going to fulfill these incredible opportunities that God has put into your life. Right, same holds true for me, right? That the thing that we want to understand is that if we want to really live the life that God calls us to, really do the sort of things that God is leading us to, we need to recognize that we are given gifts and abilities, and we have a unique set of opportunities, right? There is no one in the world who is like you, right? You are created on purpose with a purpose, right? You're not an accident, and God is fully aware of the pain that you're dealing with. And the thing is that if we will actually do the work to understand the sources of our pain and do the work to actually begin to get free from that pain, Then instead of our baggage driving our choices, we make conscious choices to live up to the things that we are capable of doing. Right? You have gifts, you have abilities. You are uniquely positioned to solve whatever problems you feel led by God to solve. Right? Because your pain is also part of your perspective. It enables you to see things in a way that are different. Right? You know, I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm probably different than most ministers you know. Right? Because of the mess I made in my life before I got here. Right? My life was an absolute mess, out of control. And I had to walk out the choices that I had made. And God redeems that if we'll turn to Him. And it gives me a very different perspective. I'm not saying it's the right one for anyone else, but it's the right one for me. And for so long of not being confident in that, I eventually became confident in that. We'll find out if I'm right. But I think it is, right? That God calls each of us through our experiences, through our pain, combined with the gifts and abilities that we have, to uniquely solve the problems that are in front of us. And that's when we actually get to live out this amazing life that we're called into. That's when we can actually live out our life that writes a story that we're joyful about. And it is never too late to address those things. It's never too late. If you are still breathing, there is time to address those things. So if there's something in your life that you know is what I'm calling baggage that you're carrying with you, do the work to get free of that. You know, and there are a lot of ways to do this. Is that, you know, if you need to see a counselor, see a counselor. I saw a cool t-shirt the other day. You can love Jesus and have a counselor too. Right? There's no reason. Unfortunately, some people believe that because of faith, they shouldn't see counselors. If you need a counselor, see a counselor. Right? Life is hard. It's painful. We all need help sometimes. You know, if you're dealing with anything that's remotely like addiction, right? Alcohol, drugs, medication abuse, gambling, pornography, any of those sort of things, there is a 12-step group geared towards dealing with that. Right? We have a 12-step group here twice a week. Right, that work, be with people who are dealing with the same issues you have, and be with people who've actually gotten to the other side. You know, at a minimum, if you're dealing with just kind of, you know, the general pain of life, get peer support. Right? Bring people together in your life and be honest with one another. Be accountable to other people, because we are not adequately accountable to ourselves. Right? We will all lie to ourselves, and we will always cut ourselves breaks. Right? And we know it was really bad, and I won't do it again till tomorrow, sort of thing. Right? You know, be surrounded by other people you can be honest with. Right? Those are the key pieces to living out our lives. Life is hard. Life is painful. We live in a broken world. Right? Jesus himself said, you will have tribulation. Life in this world is painful. It leaves a mark. And we need to be in environments and communities that help us to get through that. That's how we write the story that God is calling you to write with your life.